It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ermil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. Cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRmil13.
Friend of the show, Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, wrote a piece in which Hassan Whiteside made some polarizing comments about his playing time. We're going to talk about that later on. We're going to preview tonight's game against the Raptors as well. But let's start with this clip from Dwayne Wade's sit-down interview with George Sedano of ESPN.
If both sides got to do a do-over in the summer of 2016, do you think they would?
If you can go back, I would think we'd do over a lot of things. But, you know, I think for me and I think for the organization, I think for the city of Miami, by me leaving, I think we all appreciate each other just a little bit more. You know, if I never left, I'm not saying they wouldn't appreciate me, but it wouldn't be the same. And I same here. You know, I appreciate the city more. I appreciate the organization more. And I had to leave to figure that out, you know, and the same thing, I think, from the city of Miami and also the organization.
Interesting take there by Dwayne Wade, a little honest about, hey, maybe I didn't appreciate it as much as when I was here. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about that, David?
I think he's right on the money, to be honest with you. I think he's spoken glowingly of just in the few days since his return to the team, being fully immersed back into what we've all chided as Heat culture, but that it's a very very tangible aspect of a player developing in the league and you know, taking their game to the next level, maximizing their potential. These kinds of things you tend to take them for granted until they're gone, and then you go to a situation like Chicago where there's chaos, and another situation in Cleveland where things fall apart very quickly once the team started to lose, and I think you start to realize, you know what, Miami has been so stable for so long that he really did miss this kind of structure, and you know, a lot of some people don't, you know, like that sort of thing. Some people, you know, like playing a little bit more loosely. They don't really care about the structure of an organization. To them, it's more about just being able to, I guess, find their own way. Mm-hmm. But for Wade, I think, you know, he really needed it. He came to depend on it. And you kind of take it for granted until it's gone. So I absolutely believe that he did miss this front office, this team, the structure that's been in place for 20-something years.
It's the sort of thing that I think Heat fans and then you and I sort of talked about a lot is, do you think he misses that? Because in interviews, you know, Dwayne Wade and players will say all the right things, whether he's in Chicago, sure, or Cleveland, they'll ask him, "What do you ever compare this to Miami?" And then they'll always be like, no, you know, this is a different situation. I understand that, blah, blah, blah. But in a different interview before this one, and I can't remember with who or where or whatever, but he did mention that, like, him and LeBron would sit around and just say, you remember what it was like when we did this Miami? Whatever, like, yeah. It shows that he's human, and it shows that even LeBron was doing the same thing. We'll talk about LeBron later on and Wade's relationship with him ongoing, but it shows that they're human, and yeah, you can't fault him for doing that. And you can't fault him for, like, hey, even just appreciating how nice the weather is compared to Cleveland and Chicago. I mean, just from that to the structure of the organization, everything in between, I think he's right on the money. And I think he's also correct when he says, you know, the fans have always been great, but they even appreciate him maybe a little bit more now that he's back, because I think a lot of people didn't realize how much they missed him until it was announced that the Heat were trading to bring him back. So he did talk about his role later on in the interview with Sedano, and here's a clip on that. This is pretty interesting.
Is there an expectation for your role?
I don't have one. I'm a basketball player. And Coach, no, I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure that this team is successful. And you know, any night is a different role for me. So I have no ego coming back here. I have no expectations. You know, I just want to play basketball and hopefully be good more times than not, and have more wins than losses at the end of the year, for sure.
The key there is that he says no ego, right, David? And we talked about, you know, Wade coming off the bench for this Heat team. That is a crucial part of it, right?
Yeah, it certainly helps his assimilation become a much more fluid one. Like if he doesn't go in there with the kind of unrealistic expectations that he's going to be the dominant force on the team, that certainly makes it a lot easier for Spoelstra, for the other players on the team. Nobody gets their feathers ruffled. It just works on many, many levels. But at the same time, I have to admit that it sounds like he's kind of hedging his bets a little bit by just saying, look, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to play lots of different roles. I'm just a basketball player, whatever the hell that means. And it's as open-ended a caveat as you could possibly have. It's like, I'm just going to go out there, whether it's score 20 points, hopefully, or create for other players. I'll just do whatever it takes to help our team win. And that's, you know, it's the realistic evaluation of where he stands at this point in his career, that he can't do any one thing particularly well, nor can he be expected to be the leader, at least in terms of production for this team. So he can have many hats, and as long as he's wearing them for this team, I think it works out.
And one of those hats might be that Dion Waiters role. Before Waiters got hurt, he was really the closer on the team. We saw in Wade's first game back that he was in there in the last couple of minutes to close the game. And he was in there for defense as much as he was there for offense, I think. I mean, he had that block at the end of that Bucks game, of course. And he talked about that in that interview as well. He was like, yeah, I don't jump as high as I do, but I got the timing right at least. Look, he's probably still the no ego thing. And to your point, he's probably still in his transitional period of he's trying to figure out what he is even as a 36-year-old basketball player. Like, what is he now compared to what he was even 3 years ago, you know, when he was that great player in that Charlotte Hornets series, right, for the Heat in the playoffs. Right. He's probably still trying to figure that out because he's been in a weird situation in Chicago where he was one of three alphas or whatever. He was in that weird situation in Cleveland where he was LeBron's sidekick, and now he's back here in Miami, so he's probably still trying to figure that out. Speaking of LeBron, with Wade coming back, a lot of people are wondering, are you going to try to recruit LeBron over the summer? LeBron James, of course, being a free agent. Here's his take on that.
One of your friends who you just played with, LeBron James, is also a free agent. Would you consider recruiting him to play with you again?
No. No, I ain't got nothing to do with, none of that. One thing I know is he makes his own decisions.
Do you buy it, David?
Yeah, I do buy it. I don't think he can influence LeBron at this point in his career. I think LeBron's decisions over the past seven seasons have been his own. From even 2010, you could say that maybe coming to Miami was, largely aided because of Wade's presence on the team already. But his departure in 2014 was with Wade's knowledge, if not consent. Everything he's done since then has been his own decision about trying to retake power for himself, and that's fine, because I think the organizations have wielded so much power and made so many decisions that ignore the individual's rights. And a player like LeBron, who basically is the most important player in the NBA, he deserves that kind of ability to make his own decisions. There's a larger narrative at play here than whether or not he comes to Miami or anywhere else. He needs to either stay in Cleveland because that's going to be the feel-good mission, or because he needs to go somewhere else to get a ring. And I don't know if his joining Miami makes them a legitimate contender. I guess it probably does propel them to one of the top two or three teams in the Eastern Conference. But, I mean, they're not too far off that right now without LeBron on there. So I just don't see him
competitive against the Warriors. I mean,
yeah, right? That's another point.
And that's really what I think if we're trying to get in LeBron's head here, and I was hesitant to even talk about this on the show, but because it's just, look, I just want to shoot this down. Like, he's not coming to Miami. It's just not happening. I don't know how many Heat fans actually think it's possible. Maybe there's still Heat fans out there that think that Wade LeBron connection is still strong enough that Wade could recruit him. But I buy it from Wade. I don't think that he wants to involve himself in this. I think he's in a phase of his career where he just doesn't want to put himself in that situation. I think he understands that, look, he's in Miami to be in Miami. He's here to finish out the rest of his career, not necessarily to chase rings. He tried chasing a ring in Cleveland earlier and joining LeBron. It was clearly not going to happen for him. So he came back to Miami and got the end phase of his career underway. And for LeBron, if he leaves Cleveland, it's going to be for somewhere where he's got a realistic shot at beating the Warriors, not just playing the Warriors in the finals. He could do that where he's at now, at beating the Warriors. Now, that might be Houston. Maybe he gets another star to go to the Lakers with him. I don't know where it is, but it's certainly not Miami. We're talking about Wade's final phase of his career. That's where he's at. And George asked him about his retirement.
So right now I'm just, I'm playing a game and I'm taking it year by year. I'm going into the summer, seeing how I feel, especially from this point on. and then we'll see. But I'm here forever.
He's here forever. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, it's his decision now, I think. If Udonis has an open-ended lifetime contract, then I think that certainly applies to this version of Dwayne Wade. It's a very different player than the one that left in 2016, and I think he does mean that he's going to be here for the long haul. I don't see him going anywhere else. You know, tying into your first question about whether or not he actually appreciates Miami after having left the franchise, I think it absolutely makes sense for him to want to just come back here. It's not about, look, he wants to compete because he's an athlete who's been playing professionally for you know, 15 seasons now, and he's been a high-level athlete for beyond that. But at the same time, this is home for him. He's comfortable here. He knows the system. He knows the personnel on and off the floor. It's just the best place for him, and he doesn't have to legitimately challenge for a title. He said even when he was leaving that challenging for a title was never really the goal. Like, at first, I think he really went to Chicago because of the money, pride, and the fact that it was near his hometown. And on top of, you know, joining Cleveland was basically to play alongside LeBron again and to help him in his pursuit of another championship. But, you know, now since those things didn't work out quite the way Wade planned, I think staying in Miami is the best option for him. I see him being here for another couple of seasons. I think he can play this year and next. Mm-hmm. I think he would have probably retired at the end of next season anyway, coming back to Miami. I think that seemed to make sense. Like Udonis Haslem himself said, he expected it to happen over the summer where they were talking, kind of plan things out and say, let's play one more season together. I think it happens next year. That will be the final season of Wade's great career.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about this is he's basically saying, I'm here. That's it. So he's giving up all leverage, right? This is not when he left for Chicago where he was trying to say, like, I'm going to go meet with Denver. I'm going to go meet with Chicago, and I'll show you I've got other options. He's basically saying, no, I don't have any other options. I'm not even going to field other phone calls. I'm here. I wonder if he gets like that Udonis Haslem contract. I don't think that they're going to want to use their exceptions on him, like the mid-level exceptions or anything like that. They're going to want to save that for other contributors. I don't know what the answer to this is, but I think if Wade plans on being here and he understands what Miami's cap situation is, which he's a smart guy, I'm sure he understands what that cap situation is right now for Miami. Unless they clear a player, the only way he comes back is for the minimum. That's the only thing that they can afford at this point. And even then, they're kind of pushing it. Based on what the roster is currently. So it'll be interesting, kind of a very big change from when he was asking for $20 million a season versus when he's very openly about to just probably take the Udonis Haslem veteran minimum and come back for one more season at least. Next up, we're going to talk about Barry Jackson's piece on Hassan Whiteside. But before we move on with the show, we want to take a quick break and tell you about our Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we are humbly asking for people to commit to a monthly pledge to help us continue to improve the show.
We want to thank everybody that's already contributed, who's already supported the show. We've quickly reached our initial funding goal, and that allowed us to purchase the software that we're using right now to improve the sound quality of the podcast that you listen to.
By going to patreon.com/lockedonheat and becoming a patron, you will become an official Locked On Heat board member. David and I like to hear from you, and by creating this board, we'll have a group of dedicated listeners to bounce ideas for the show off of, and you'll have an opportunity to influence the podcast. Plus, you'll get to tell your friends that you're on a board.
That's a great bonus right there. So we know we're asking for a lot, but we really appreciate it. Please go check it out. Again, it's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat.
Later on in the show, we're going to preview tonight's game versus the Raptors. Dwayne Wade's second game in Miami. Yes. We'll talk about that later on. But we got to get to this Barry Jackson article in the Miami Herald that came out specifically about Whiteside's playing time, right? And we've heard rumblings and grumblings from Whiteside. And that might be understating it. I mean, he's been pretty open about his lack of playing time at times, specifically at the end of ball games. His minutes per game have dropped from 32.6 per game to 25.7 minutes per game this season. That's pretty substantial. And Whiteside in that piece with Jackson said, and I'm going to read this quote here, "I'm not going to lie. It's frustrating. It's nothing I can really do about it. Just keep a positive attitude. Coach is going to try to do what's best for the team. He just wants to win. If I am playing 10 less minutes than I played last year, there isn't much I can do about it." Continuing on here, that's what the GM wanted. Pat Riley drafted a center, Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk. They gave him a big contract. That's what they wanted. They wanted more people in the front court. That's what the Heat wanted. And now Jackson did hedge in his piece saying, like, by no means was Whiteside complaining. He was just sort of speaking matter-of-factly. But this has gotten a lot of play, specifically on Heat Twitter, David. Do you see this as an issue that needs to be resolved? What's your take on this?
I don't know that it needs to be resolved because the trade deadline was last week and that was the only realistic time that you could resolve it. Mm-hmm. You either jettison Whiteside and move that issue or non-issue, whatever it might be. And I don't believe Jackson either. Like, I think while Whiteside may not be overtly complaining about his minutes, it just still seems like it's something that's always on his mind. And it's like, you know, in his fourth year with Miami now, it's time to move on. You've got your big contract. What else do you want? Is it about winning? Is it about numbers? I mean, if you say it's about winning, then shut up. Then why gripe about this at all? Why bring it up? And I know he's probably asked a question. And again, we've always discussed the fact that Hassan may not have the mental wherewithal to deflect these kinds of questions in a polished manner. You know, he's still fairly inexperienced with dealing with media. He's always had issues with it since he was originally drafted years ago. Mm-hmm. He just may struggle with how to answer this, but he needs to understand that this team is built differently. He's not going to get a lot of playing time, and it's mostly because of his own limitations. There's only so much he can do at the end of games. That's why he's not playing those clutch minutes. And if he takes a dip as far as his overall playing time is concerned, it doesn't matter. You know, the fact is, look, later on in that article, he brought up his player efficiency rating from ESPN, saying that he was in between the top 6 and 10 most efficient players in the league, which wasn't true because he was actually a 12th best, which I was actually widely surprised to find out.
And honestly, that's a bullcrap statistic. I don't care. Like,
yeah,
it's a weird made-up ESPN thing. It's like their quarterback rating that they made up and then threw away like 3 years ago for the NFL. It's a bunch of crap. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. It's just, I agree 100%. But it's just like, he's aware of these things. Like, he can't help himself. It's like, why bring this up? If you say you don't care about statistics of playing time, why are you bringing up how efficient you are as a reason why you should be playing more? Like, it's just, he can't get out of his own way. I mean, look, we've spent so much time talking about Whiteside's attitude problem. It's clear that it's still there, even if Jackson says otherwise. I think it's still going to be an issue. And unfortunately, there's nothing that we can really do about it because he's on this roster for at least the rest of this season. He just needs to shut up and play. And I hate saying that because I think every individual player has the right to voice any concerns. But he's been paid. You know, if anything, you know, you're angling to put up as many, you know, points and rebounds as possible so that you can parlay that into a contract. He's already got his deal. Whether he wants league-wide respect or not, I think we've seen that players can share playing time and still gain that respect. So it's just up to him to play better as an individual.
I think you nailed it right there. I think it is the numbers. And look, you're right. He got the contract, but we've seen him get upset about not being on the all defense team or whatever, because he's got X amount of blocks per game or whatever in a season, X amount of leading the league in rebounds, whatever it might be. There is a part of him that wants that recognition. He wants to be on a stage. He wants to be on NBA.com as, you know, one of the top 5 defensive players in the league. You know, he wants to be better than DeAndre Jordan, who he thinks he's better than already. He wants to be better than Rudy Gobert, who he doesn't particularly like because Gobert takes pot shots at him on Twitter. But I think that's part of it. And he realizes, like, if I'm playing, he says 10 fewer minutes a game, it's more like 7. If he's playing 6 or 7 fewer minutes a game, that eats into his numbers. That eats into his blocks per game. That eats into his rebounds per game. And I think he sees that and he says, no, I still want to be this productive person because I want that recognition. And look, I have no problem with that. Every player is motivated by different things. It would be a lot worse if he got his big contract and then regressed to what he was before he signed in Miami, which was just a problem and no production, right? At least he is still producing somewhat. But you know, there's a few things at play here. Number one is that the Heat did draft Bam Adebayo and they did sign Kelly Olynyk. I think that they wanted to play Olynyk at the 4 next to Whiteside, realized that might have not been the best option. Olynyk was playing backup center behind Whiteside a lot for the season, which meant that you had to eat into Whiteside's minutes to get Olynyk on the floor, specifically because of how effective Olynyk was offensively for them. And then Bam Adebayo, who they probably didn't think would be this good this early, they need to find him minutes as well. So that's eating into him. I don't think that they've assumed, I don't think that the Heat thought Whiteside would be playing 26 minutes a game at this point. I think they believed he'd still be right around 30 minutes a game, 29, 30 minutes a game, with Olynyk possibly playing more at the four and Bam playing spot minutes here and there at the end of decided ball games. So there's a couple of things at play here, but, you know, we agree, I think, that having Whiteside play 26 minutes a game is certainly better in today's NBA than 33 minutes a game. And that's true. And if he could be a more efficient, effective player in smaller doses, that is a best version of him. Unfortunately, the Heat are paying him $23 million a year, and that's too much to pay him now. So he's better in the role he's playing now, but the Heat are paying him too much to play that role. So that's, I do think that the situation needs to get resolved. You're right, the trade deadline's over. I think this is something that gets resolved over the summer one way or another.
Yeah, you know, I'm okay with him. You know, he's already got the contract. There's not much we can do with it. I'm okay with him getting paid as much as he is and not necessarily being what you would typically define as a superstar, just so long as he continues to play that lower, that smaller, more efficient role that we think he's best suited for. And that's fine. If he plays 26, 27 great minutes of basketball as opposed to 26 minutes of on and off basketball, I'm okay with how much he gets paid. To be honest with you, it doesn't really matter to me. I know he eats up a lot of salary or whatever, but again, that will translate into more winning for this team. So it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, you're not signing him to be Kevin Durant. You don't expect him to put up 30 minutes per game or whatever. You know, I don't know. I think he's.
But that's
he's
fine, that's a big if, man. That's like a big, like you said it earlier. It's been 3 years of this. I don't think this is going to change. I mean, you could play him 25 minutes a game for the rest of the season. I think he's going to go into next season expecting to. And look, he might put work in over the summer and try to get better. But I just there's too many players right now that need time in that front court for Miami. I mean, look, maybe they keep Whiteside, and they trade Olynyk or they trade, you know, Bam Adebayo in a package to get to upgrade and get a superstar player this summer. I'm not saying Whiteside's the guy that's going to get moved here. There's plenty of options, and we've been surprised by the NBA several times over. But I do think something's got to give because I don't think you could pay him that much just because of what he does against the cap and where Miami is. I think somebody has to move, and it just makes sense to move somebody at that front court, whether it be probably James Johnson or Whiteside. And I'm not sure their situations are inclusive of each other. So we'll see. We're going to preview tonight's game against the Raptors next, but a quick reminder to make sure that you're subscribed to Locked On Heat so that you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as on Spotify.
Subscribing is the best way to support the show, as well as our own Patreon page. Another great way to support the show is to leave us a review in iTunes. It increases our ranking and helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So the Heat are on the road. They are in Toronto tonight to play the Raptors, the surging Raptors. They're playing really well. And they're not all that hurt, so they're healthy. The Heat are not that healthy. They might be without OG Anunoby, one of our favorite pet prospects during the draft process, right, David?
Yes.
He's questionable with an ankle sprain. He may or may not play. He's been good for them, even though he's hit a little bit of a rookie wall lately. But he's got a great plus minus for the Heat. Kelly Olynyk still out with the shoulder. He did travel with the team.
Yes.
Okay, so he traveled with the team. Ronnie Magruder's out, but at least he is traveling with the team as well. He participated in his first full shoot around earlier in the week, I'm sorry. And then Deion Waiters, of course, is out. So Olynyk is really the only notable one there that we're still waiting to hear back, but he's not going to play in Toronto, and it doesn't sound like he's going to play in Philadelphia the next game. So look, this is a big game for Miami after beating Milwaukee. Dwayne Wade's second game back. Do you think they have enough of a spark to get it done in Toronto?
I think so. I think there's you don't want to put too much emphasis on Wade's return, but at the same time, I think it does provide somewhat of a spark. Like, look, obviously the team's going to be a little shorthanded, but I think they understand now that this is a team built to win this season. They didn't jettison any of their major players. They didn't acquire a superstar because none was really available. But at the same time, this wasn't about next season or the season beyond that. It's about this year, and I think that's what the addition of Wade signifies. It's that they're in it to win it as much as possible. And a title is not realistic, but they're going to try and make whatever noise they can in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And that means beating up on teams like Toronto. I mean, they've only played them once this season. It was a one-point win on Wayne Ellington's miraculous shot in the closing minutes there. But, you know, I think they understand what's at stake here. It's going to be a really, really tough matchup. Not only is it in Toronto, but the Raptors will have Kyle Lowry back, who was out against Miami when they first played each other earlier in January. It's going to be a really, really interesting matchup, I think. You know, obviously Toronto's much deeper than they have been in years past. There was a little bit of tension there between James Johnson and Serge Ibaka. So there's always some drama there. There's an opportunity for Whiteside to challenge Jonas Valanciunas, a matchup that he's taken personally in the years past. You know, there's so much there. Valanciunas has expanded his range. He's shooting threes now. There's so many different dynamics that play here. So, it's a great, great game.
So I think that we'll probably see the similar starting lineup to that Milwaukee game of Dragic, Tyler Johnson at the two, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow at that small ball four,
and Whiteside at center.
But you know what? You're right, because you think they might move James Johnson back into the starting lineup?
Yeah, I think they have to. With Anunoby potentially playing, let's say he starts. He's obviously a long wing player you can guard. He's a taller version of Winslow in that he can guard a number of players. You've got Ibaka there who can fan out to the three-point line. Do you want to waste Winslow on him? I think you'd rather have him guard a perimeter player.
Like DeRozan.
Somebody like that. Yeah, and then you've got his size on there, Valanciunas. Obviously, he plays out a little bit in the perimeter, but he's also known to throw a few elbows around the rim as well. So I think you kind of have to go with a bigger lineup, and I think that means playing James.
So James Johnson along with maybe Winslow and Richardson?
Yeah, that's probably
Richardson
best.
Tyler.
Yeah. I think that's probably best.
That's what I think, too, because if you could sort of play Richardson and Winslow against Lowry and DeRozan, let James Johnson take Ibaka. You can maybe hide Dragic on Anunoby.
Yeah.
And then Whiteside, obviously, on Valanciunas. That makes sense to me. We'll see. Spoelstra hasn't been shy about switching up his lineups. James Johnson specifically makes sense, especially because how much switching Toronto likes to do.
Yeah.
If you can get James Johnson switched onto DeRozan, I think he can handle himself there. Lowry might be a little bit too quick for him. But DeRozan likes to sort of slow it down and play in the mid post still, even though DeRozan has expanded his game to the 3-point line this year. He still has his game that he likes to go to. And then again, speaking of Dwayne Wade, look, we talked about the sort of the boost that he's given this team. What we haven't really talked a whole lot about in that last game against Milwaukee, because Wade grabbed all the headlines, rightly so, but James Johnson refound his offensive game. Wayne Ellington refound his offensive game against Milwaukee. If they can sort of continue being on that track where they could be effective offensively, that's going to be huge. You mentioned Ellington's three-pointer to win the game the last time these two teams played. Ellington's going to need to score from three-point range. They're going to need as much of James Johnson as possible. Again, because this Heat team just doesn't play well when James Johnson doesn't play well. He seems to be the barometer lately. So hopefully this team is invigorated enough and they don't get into too many scoring slumps, because one thing Toronto can do is score. And they've been a really good defensive team too. They could kind of force those slumps as well. I mean, they're no doubt the better team, but Miami's done a decent job of sort of playing up to competition this season. And that extra boost, that energy boost from Dwayne Wade, maybe it does put him over the top. Who knows?
Yeah, I kind of like. I'm curious to see, you know, how Miami matches up with this team that's been playing so well. Is probably, you know, not just record wise, but they've been the top of the Eastern Conference. You know, recently they eclipsed past, I think they just went past Boston, right, as far as the standings are concerned, but they've been playing at a high level for the past few weeks now, the past few months, really. I should correct also the fact that I think Ellington's game winning shot was actually that time he drove on the baseline for that layup, not a 3-point shot, but either way, it was,
oh, you're right.
Yeah, it was the surprising layup from Ellington in the closing seconds there. So, that was a great, great game. I don't know. I understand from Toronto's perspective, they're probably looking to make some noise the same way Milwaukee did. Milwaukee kind of saw, you know, they've been playing well of late after the replacement of Jason Kidd. And I think they kind of saw that Miami was going to be an easy team to defeat after losing five straight. It didn't work out that way. And I could see Toronto trying to make take a stand against Miami as well. Do you have any predictions? Do you want to make any predictions on tonight's game?
I think we'll see more of that Bam Adebayo Hassan Whiteside front court, because I think that could play against Ibaka and Valanciunas. So that's my one prediction that I'll make, as we see more of that front court.
You think Bam should start over James Johnson then, perhaps?
No. I don't think he'll start, but I think we'll see that. I think we'll see Spoelstra go to that lineup, and I think we'll see him go to that lineup specifically when Ibaka and Valanciunas are in there, or Ibaka and Jakob Poeltl are in there.
Okay.
One of those combos, but I think we'll still see more of that Bam Whiteside combination, because I think it could play against them. And I do expect at some point that we will stop seeing that so much, because I don't think it's very good.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have a prediction? I mean, I assumed you asked me about a final score prediction, but I completely dodged the question.
No, that's my, you've always been hesitant to provide a prediction like that. So that's par for the course. I do not. I like the fact that Miami's had a couple of days to kind of gel together. And I think there's an energy around this team that hasn't been there for some time now. I like Miami's chances, to be honest with you. I don't think they're scared of traveling to Toronto and losing one there against the Raptors, to be honest with me, with you. So I think Miami pulls out a victory, to be honest with you.
Well, we'll figure it out. We'll see. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of the game versus the Raptors. But for now, that's all we have for today. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. You can tweet your questions and comments for our recap using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to get those in there, by the way, when you're on Twitter watching the game. Hashtag AskLOHeat, and we'll get to those during the recap. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.